Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is July the 13th, and a weird enough day for me to think that it's probably Friday, but it isn't. It's Monday, and that only means, well, it's going to get weirder, isn't it? Welcome to the Horn for this Monday night broadcast. John Fox, if you're around, I hope you are feeling better, my brother. John emailed in to let us all know that he was under the weather last night, and hence no all foxed up for Sunday. Hopefully he will be back above the weather very soon. Let's see. God, I don't know where to start. Nazis in Pennsylvania, Nazis in Washington, D.C. Oh, wait. This all makes perfectly good sense. How about let's start close to home? Sure, why not? You know, I told you it was going to be movie night Saturday night for the whole fam family. And indeed it was. We made our way down to Charleston, the state capital, for the world premiere at the West Virginia Cultural Center. The world premiere of Mary Lynn Evans' riveting documentary, Coal Country. We were all set to be on time and everything. But, as we have noted on a number of occasions, if there's a God, and if, as, for instance, the Muslims say he has many names, well, one of those names is irony. God, dog, the flying spaghetti monster, whatever he is one of irony, first and foremost. For as we went down the mountain, around the curves, through the dips, over the blah, 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 over the river and through the woods to, you know. We got to the foot of the mountain, almost to Gauley Bridge. And there is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful waterfall there. It's called Cathedral Falls. When it gets really, really brutally, I mean just brutally cold in the winter, crazy people come and climb the frozen, falls that have frozen into solid ice. But it wasn't winter. It was high summer. The falls were falling beautifully. And also there at Cathedral Falls, a CSX railway line crosses. And it was there that we stopped and there that we sat and sat and sat. Why were we sitting? Well, we were made late for the premiere of Coal Country by a coal train. Yes. A couple of miles worth of boxcars trailing their way out of West Virginia carrying our wealth, carrying our health, carrying our future. Yep. It wasn't Mr. Peabody's coal train, but it was damn sure hauling it away. Thank you very much, John Prine. So we were late, and we missed some of the fun, and it was hard to get, well, it was impossible to get a seat in the theater. It's not that small a theater. There's a good number of seats. But it was jam-packed. and lots of people standing outside the auditorium, sort of peeking in to get a view of the screen, and they had a little portable PA system hooked up out in the lobby so that you could at least hear the audio. And so that's what a lot of people did. I did get to go in and watch a little bit of it. And I learned a little lesson. Because, you see, there were a whole bunch of Fockers in there. You know, friends of Cole. Because they were bound and determined that they were going to keep them tree huggers from seeing that tree-hugging movie. But it was kind of stealthy-like, really. Because the Fockers then had to sit there and actually deal with the fact, the multiple facts presented to them, about exactly what it is they're doing to this state and this region, about what they're doing to their own people as well as the rest of us. But just not that there's a very, very great likelihood that you ever will, but should you? Just a little piece of information. Just a piece of advice from old Bob. Because I'm that kind of nice guy. Piece of advice from old Bob. Never go to the movies with a Fokker. Don't. Because they haven't caught it, you know, mountain removers are not the smartest bunch in the lot. For instance, there was the young Fokker couple who had just gotten married, and being fundamentalist and right-wing friends of Cole, they'd saved themselves for merge. And they got to their wedding night, and, well, the young Fokker fellow was kind of confused. And he didn't quite know what to do on his wedding night. And finally, in frustration, his young Fokker wife, who had at least had a little bit of a talk from her Fokker mother, said, "Honey, take that thing you play with and put it where I pee." So the young Fokker man got up out of bed, got his bowling ball, and threw it in the sink. "I'll be here all week," tried the veal. No, they're not a bright lot. So the reason I say never take a Fokker to the movies with you is, I don't know, are you like me when you go to the movies and you pay an exorbitant amount of money, although this was free, but you go to the movies and you pay an exorbitant amount of money, and God knows the popcorn's expensive as all hell, and they salt the living bejesus out of it, so then you'll go and buy some high fructose corn syrup laden pop to wash it down with, which is also, you got to take a boat loan out to get it. You understand the dodge. Anyway. But you spend all that money going to the movies, and you want to sit there and watch the movie. Now, if it's a funny movie, you expect that people will laugh. If it's a tragedy, you expect to hear a little of that. But nothing makes me crazier in the movie theater than somebody who sits and talks like it's their living room all the way through the movie. I'll have you know that in my younger, singler days, I actually stopped dating relationships because of certain otherwise attractive, otherwise available young women wouldn't shut up in the movie. I'm just that way, I guess. And I'll be in trouble for that one. But anyway, you know, after the movie, when you go to the little dessert place and you have a little piece of cheesecake and a cup of coffee after the movie and you talk about the relative men, not during the movie! But no, not the Fockers. Oh, no, not the friends of Cole. Not the boys from Argus Energy. They didn't really wear their stripes Saturday night. They wore their company T-shirts black and it said Argus Energy. No, not the friends of Cole. The Fockers hooted and hollered at the movie screen all the way through. And it was a movie theater, so they kind of had to behave themselves. They were out in public. It wasn't like they were young Adam Pauly on Cayford Mountain not thinking anybody was videoing his skinhead self and his shirtless self. No, they knew the eyes of the world were on them. There were TV cameras out there. And so they had to sort of be well-behaved. So I was able to lean over to one of them and say, "Psst, hey, buddy. That woman you're talking to on the screen, she's not really here. It's called a movie." Of course, for all my trouble and my sarcasm, I got a "F you, buddy." And then at the beginning, and just a little bit of West Virginia history for you, so you'll know what the sense of outrage stems from. Before the movie, the film's creator, Mary Lynn Evans. By the way, if you want to learn more about the film, you can go to Coal Country, C-O-A-L-C-O-U, bleh. Sorry, Mary Lynn. You can go to Coal Country, C-O-A-L-C-O-U-N-T-R-Y, Coal Country, the movie.com. At some point in time, it'll be showing on PBS, and I hope you'll keep an eye out for it and watch it when it does. You're going to want to see this. Among other things, you'll get to see a lot of the people that I talk about here on the program. But prior to the beginning of the film, Mary Lynn Evans made some opening remarks, and she recognized a truly wonderful... wonderful gentleman, a statesman of West Virginia, the likes of whom Robert C. Byrd can only aspire to. And I'm talking about 94-year-old former congressman, former member of the Truman administration, former Secretary of State, author, Second World War hero, Ken Heckler. She introduced Ken Heckler, and the Fockers jeered him, and booed him, and catcalled him, and manifested every bit of disrespect of which they were capable. No joke. Now, Ken Heckler is a man who, when the rest of the country didn't, sort of like it's been until the issue of mountain removal became more prevalent and more people are learning about it now, but most of the country was indifferent to what happened to coal miners, real coal miners, who went underneath the earth to get at coal. When the rest of the country was indifferent to the plight of the coal miner, Ken Heckler was standing up for them. Ken Heckler was fighting like a man possessed for meaningful regulation that would not only protect and preserve but save lives in Appalachia's coal mines. Ken Heckler never had a doubt but that black lung was real, even back when the coal companies and their hired gun doctors would come in and say, "Well, see him, he smokes. That's what's wrong with his lungs. He smokes. Ain't no such thing as black lung." Ken Heckler knew there was. And Ken Heckler was willing to hare-lip hell itself to get help for coal miners, for black lung, for mine safety. Everything that most underground miners more or less take for granted today, Ken Heckler was responsible for. And when the federal government, on behalf of the coal companies, denied a man his black lung benefits and fought him at every turn, hoping to wait the man out until he would conveniently drop dead, Ken Heckler was there. And Ken Heckler raised 18 shades of hell for thousands upon thousands of individual miners in this state who got black lung benefits directly and exclusively because of what he had done in advocating for them. That is Ken Heckler. You ever heard a famous World War story called The Bridge at Remagen? You know about that because of Ken Heckler. Ken Heckler wrote The Bridge at Remagen, a tale of amazing heroism from the European theater of the Second World War. That is Ken Heckler. The men and women who booed and jeered him and made greater asses of themselves than perhaps many of us even thought they were capable. Why, their daddies and their granddaddies, and some even their great-granddaddies, benefited from the man whom they would have gladly spat upon had he just gotten within reach of a well-timed loogie. That's a Focker for you. That's how they behave. And you know me well enough, I hope, that I don't say they and those people lightly. But I have found I am hard-pressed to refer to the Fockers in any other way. You know, as a rule, we mountain people, if we have everything in the world taken from us, we try to retain some degree of our own human dignity. And it has been frequently said of mountain people, Appalachian folk, that even if they have little, what little they have, they will gladly share. And that we tender respect to those who have earned it. Well, thanks to the race to the bottom, which mountain removal has engendered in Appalachia. As of this past Saturday night, the 11th of July, 2009, that old myth of the mountaineer is dead. Because standing before many of us who simply wanted to see the film and were ready to quietly sit and watch, but also before a contingent of ill-bred, ill-mannered, ill-tempered thugs spat upon themselves, upon their mothers and fathers, upon their heritage, and upon this very state itself. And then the film rolled. And every time their master, Don Blankenship, would appear on screen, they responded like the old dogs in that RCA gramophone, RCA Victor portrait. leaning a little harder toward the speaker. You remember the motto, his master's voice. So that every time Don Blankenship would show up on the screen talking about the Greeniacs and communists, they would hoot and squeal in delight. You would have thought to have been in the room that the Fockers thought it was, I don't know, wrestling down to the armory. But there were no altercations. All went well. After the film was over, some of those guys wearing their Argus t-shirts spilled out into the onto the little plaza in front of the cultural center and began hooting and hollering and screaming at someone that they deemed was a tree hugger and an out-of-stater. What about my home? Well, what about the homes of those that you work to destroy who are 9th and 10th generation Appalachian folk, buddy? Yeah, but what about my job? That was Saturday. Brilliant film. Got to see people that, of course, we know and love. And this is what it boils down to. We got to see the best behavior that a gang of Fockers have to offer. I've just described what their behavior was like, and that's as good as it gets. That is as good as it gets. So do keep an eye out. Go to the website. Give Mary Lynn and the production company a little bit of website click love by hitting the site coalcountrythemovie.com. Not .org, .com, coalcountrythemovie.com. You will hear their audio begins. Audio begins when you open the site. And you will hear a rendition of the old labor ballad, "Whose Side Are You? Which Side Are You On?" as performed by Natalie Merchant. That will, if you're anything at all like me, send chills down your spine. It's featured in the film. Also featured in the film, some music by Kathy Mattea, beautifully done, also soul-stirring. Go and have a look, read around, and keep an eye out for when it shows up on PBS. Because even if it's airing during the time that this show is on, I heartily encourage you to shut everything down and go and watch it. For those of you who have only heard me talk about it but have not seen it, this will be the best vision of it you will ever get, short of coming here. So that's where we begin, by golly. That's where we begin. Movie night for the Kincaids in the big city with the Fockers. That isn't where we will wind up by any stretch of the imagination. No. No, we got a lot of other things on the plate today. Yeah, I got caught. Boxcars? No, they were not boxcars that held us up. They were gondola cars. I knew I was like, yeah, the open top thingies. Gondola car. No, those aren't gondola cars. Not boxcars. Okay. Are those gondola cars? I thought gondola cars were like the ones that haul the timber and stuff. But no, they were not boxcars. They were cars of some sort, and they held us up and made us late. You guys do not let me get away with anything. Jesus, if Flush Flimball had to deal with the kind of fact checking you guys do on the fly, he wouldn't be able to do 15 minutes of radio, let alone 3 hours. No, we've got a lot of things to go into this evening. Interesting. You remember CNN was largely blessed with dirty coals, dirty money during the pageant season, and the Democratic and Republican pageants in the last election year were all brought to you by Clean Coal. Well, it looks like that buys you a little something. Headline at CNN, Country's betting tech can clean up coal. I'll take that bet. I don't care how much it can be. I'll take that bet. Can't be done. Now, this isn't like we can't go to the moon. That was technology overcoming physical hurdles. What we're talking about with clean coal and carbon capture and storage, what we're talking about is an absolute violation of the principles of physics. Yeah, purple polka-dotted unicorns, the stuff like that, yeah, flying horses. The stuff that you can get in major religion books and Bibles and so forth, but you can't get in reality. Tinkerbell stuff. This is Tinkerbell science. The corporate side likes to say, well, you know, them tree huggers, they believe that junk science. That's their freight? Okay, I got one for you fellas. You're buying into Tinkerbell science, where if you only believe in it and throw enough money at it, it'll be real. Sorry. Thanks for playing. Here's a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat, and a copy of the home game. No, but apparently that buys you some pretty good PR. John D. Sutter, the author of the article on CNN.com, in the high-stakes game of climate change, the United States and other countries are betting on the idea that technology can make dirty coal cleaner. Yeah. No. But it's there. It's there. But, of course, I would be remiss if I did not take note of the fact that today was the opening of the Sonia Sotomayor confirmation hearings for her seat on the Supreme Court of the United States of America. And most of the day was taken up in pontification. I don't know who sets the rules for these Senate affairs. But why, and I don't care what committee it is, it's not just the Judiciary Committee. Why do we have to have, oh wait, because it's theater, because it's wrestling, because it's just like what happens down to the armory on Saturday nights. Y'all come. Why do we have to have these interminable blatherings from these senators before? Get in there and start the question. Now, I do not for an instant challenge the right of a senator to make a summation. That's the nature of the debate inside the Senate. But the opening statements are just grandstanding BS. And they offer opportunities for freaks from the anti-abortion debate come screaming into the CNN reporting that the disruption at the hearing today was caused by Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade fame screaming at Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein, what about the unborn babies? To which I simply answer, what about the born ones? Shouldn't we take care of the ones who were born before we start worrying about the imaginary babies? I mean, I'm just saying. What about the unborn babies? So they, you know, hauled her away and find her and stuff. I guess she managed to sneak into the hearing room without sitting down in the hallway, because she would have been arrested right then and there for demonstrating. We know those rules now. I wonder if my friend the Capitol policeman was there. You will not sit down in my hallway! Jesus. But I caught some of the pontificating. I caught, you know, it was funny watching Arlen Specter try to be a Democrat. Of course, then again, where the Senate's concerned, it's funny watching about half of the so-called Democratic majority of the Senate try to be Democrats. I saw him make his statements in support of diversity on the court, and we shouldn't have waited. And, you know, it's all true. It's just that I know that a few months ago, he would not have dared say those things about a Democratic nominee, a Democratic president's nominee, because he was busy being a repig-licking. See, I don't trust wolves in sheep's clothing. And I caught some of Senator Charles Grassley, who has just annoyed the piss out of me since the first time I ever saw him when he was a young but obnoxious right winger back when he was defending Ronnie Reagan and that thug of a former Marine colonel, what's his name, Oliver North, way back in the mid to late 1980s during the Iran-Contra hearings. I remember watching him going, "Oh, you jackass, what's wrong with the people of Iowa? How can they send a good man like Tom Harkin to the Senate at the same time that they send a freak like Charles Grassley?" But they do. So I watched some of the pontificating from him. That mush-mouthed old bigot, that hateful old drawling goon, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, was there leading the charge as well. He was disgusting, to say the least. And it was all for nothing. It was all wrestling. It was all theater. Not a bit of reality to it. Just a bunch of hooey. Why waste the people's time? Why waste the money of the people of the United States so some senator, Democrat or Republican, remember, I'm equal opportunity here, can blather? I want to hear the nominee. I want to see how the nominee responds to the questioning. And none of that was aided by day-long prattling. So, you know, just it will continue tomorrow, and it will be darned interesting. A little video here from the folks over at Think Progress, the audio to video, that is, of some of the remarks today. That's very brief.
When Chief Justice Roberts came before this committee in 2005, he famously said a Supreme Court justice is like an umpire.
Umpire, umpire, some umpire.
Umpires calling balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes?
Balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes?
Balls and strikes.
No balls and no strikes.
Balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes.
It's a little hard to see home plate from right field.
Charming. Because the balls and strikes thing was a carefully crafted right-wing the talking point back during the Roberts confirmation.
And, of course, a judge must be so much more than an umpire behind the plate calling balls and strikes. It really does take, because, you know, if you think about Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., and his comment that it is possible to live greatly in the law, you have to take into account that living greatly in the law does not mean one gives up one's humanity and becomes some sort of a judicial robot, which is what the right-wing justices are. They are little activist judicial robots who, without fail, will vote on the side of authority, authoritarianism, the right wing. Anything that smells even faintly of fascism is their darling and their poster child. But they hide it behind things like balls and strikes and balls and strikes. So we will, I think we will be, treated to some interesting examples of typical right-wing hate here in the next couple of days, and it bears watching. It most assuredly does. So again, another place from which to diverge, and something else for us to inquire. What do you expect out of that? You think Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III might actually screw up and use an epithet or two or stick his foot in it real good? You know, if he feels threatened enough, he might. Because, like so many right-wingers, not a very bright man. And if you can just push him hard enough, he'll make a genuine braying ass of himself. I have real hope. I have real hope for that. That he would be such an embarrassment that, you know, Alabama would look up and go, "What were we thinking?" I mean, him? Sure would be nice if a credible Democrat would rise up and run against that smarmy dumbass. May not happen, though. May not happen. So that's just, like I said, that's just a couple of jumping off points for the beginning of the evening and the beginning of the week. Wherever you want to go is fine by me. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877. The numeral 4, head on. That's the toll-free way to get through. If you want to spend your own money, 304-658-3333 is the number. 304-658-3333. We've been hearing from new listeners, and it's all very exciting, and I hope you'll feel free to chime in if you've never called the program before. I look forward to it, in fact. You can also reach me via email, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. BobKincaid@gmail.com. And by the way, I'm reminded by our buddy David in Tennessee that Charles Grassley, explaining Grassley, remember the other night when we talked about that weird crypto-fascist evangelical gang that operates and lurks in the shadows in Washington, D.C., called The Family? The Family that has that place they call C Street, the C Street House? You know, where John Ensign came to talk to his brothers in Christ about that woman that he was a-banging on? And where Mark Sanford came before at some point before he decided to hike the Appalachian Trail, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Yeah, that family. Charles Grassley's a member of that. Yeah, really. So, why am I not surprised? Why am I not surprised? Which leads me to what I think will be the perfect bumper. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
D-Ball!
Yeah, that sort of just seemed rather, self-choosing. Strange days indeed. Monday the 13th, though. Look, let's get right to it. Let's get this stuff out of the way. The sooner we do, the sooner it's passed. And, well, but it never passes, does it? God, right-wing hate. Ugh. I learned something today. I've learned something in the last week or so. You know, I told you that our good buddy, Spike Rogan, from Eastern PA, wrote in after viewing the video of the Massey thug at the picnic on Kayford Mountain. The guy who ripped his shirt off, and there's more video, and you haven't seen it. And there was another video that came out this weekend, and different angles, a little bit more of this. But there's even more stuff yet to come of this freak. But in seeing the first video of it, Spike wrote in and said, "You know, Bob, that guy looks a lot more like a skinhead than anything else in the world." And of course he did, what with his shaven head. But he pointed out the tattoos on him. And I got to, and I did notice them, and there was this the weird geometric stuff. Well, then Spike sent me another news story last night. And it was really quite interesting. Nazis in Pennsylvania. And, you know, not just, no, this from the, from a publication called the Pocono Record. News and information from Northeast Pennsylvania. The reporter is Dan Barrett. Dan Barrett was arrested, about a week ago. No, not Dan Barrett was arrested. What I'm saying, Dan Barrett writes about an arrest a week ago. Whew, come on, Bob. Get with the program. No. Dan Barrett writes about an arrest about a week ago of an individual by the name of Michael John Parrish. The 23-year-old Parrish was arrested and charged with murdering his girlfriend and their 18-month-old son. Prosecutors have announced that they will pursue the death penalty. He was photographed as he was arrested, and the photographs were enlightening, shall we say. This guy had a bunch of ink, and this is no criticism of tattoos or ink by any stretch of the imagination. But in this particular instance, Michael Parrish, 23 years old, had, let's see, there's a Confederate flag on his arm. There's a Celtic cross, a couple of them. There's an out-and-out swastika. Boldly black on in a band around his left bicep is the word Hitler. Some sort of bizarre right-wing initials tattooed across his fingers. And on his neck, a weird geometric design. That when I looked at it and thought back to the geometrics on Andrew Pauly's tattooed pate, I realized were probably what I didn't think they were. Did you know? And of course you did. Did you know that there is more than one way to make a swastika? you and I are most familiar with the typical German Nazi variety, the Hakenkreuz, the broken cross. But there are other manifestations of it. And lo and behold, Michael John Parrish has one on his neck. And it is a series of crescents intertwined so that they do, in fact, create the same impression that that clockwork effect of a swastika. And, of course, the swastika also appears in Native American art, Amerindian art, if you will, and other parts of the globe as well as, you know, some sort of magical talisman. Hitler and his Nazi party did not invent the symbol. They merely rendered it a symbol filled with hate forevermore, much as rebellious Southerners did with that red flag with the X, blue X across it, and the 13 or 12, I don't know, stars in it. No, offhand, I don't know how many stars. I got to say, I'm kind of proud of that. One of the few times I've ever been proud of my ignorance. 15 of the tattoos on Michael John Parrish's body, on his arms and neck, according to the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center, two completely different organizations, about 15 of the tattoos on his arms and neck carried some sort of racist or white pride message. And they even have meaning separate from, the groupings have meaning separate from the individual designs. Above his right elbow, he had a black band with the number 22. That stands for Firm 22, and that is a subgroup within another group called the Vinlanders Social Club. The Vinlanders Social Club being a skinhead gang. Mark Pitkavage is director of the investigative research unit for the Anti-Defamation League, and said Parrish knew a bunch of the Vinlander Social Club guys in Pennsylvania and hung out with them, noting that they have a presence in Pennsylvania and overlap with another group known as the Keystone Skinheads. They are semi anti-authoritarian. And the people in northeast Pennsylvania are suddenly a little bit unnerved because they're not used to imagining that they've got Nazis and skinheads in their midst. These hate-filled, bigoted, racist, terrorist thugs also have adopted the crest of an Italian division of the Waffen-SS, which they use to entice people of Italian heritage into their ranks. So what? I mean, I know you're not saying so what, but the fact of the matter is, this is a 23-year-old skinhead with a bunch of ink on his body. I mean, there's no way you can't see this stuff. It's all over him. It's like he was a member of the Tattoo of the Month Club. Or should we say the White Supremacist Tattoo of the Month Club? So what, though? He's a skinhead. He's a terrorist. He murdered their 18-month-old son and his girlfriend. That didn't come out quite right. The 18-month-old son didn't have a girlfriend. He murdered his girlfriend and the 18-month-old baby boy that they had together. It's just another day in America. Because by virtue of the various and sundry deals with the devil that we have made, we are going to have this. This ain't Singapore. Some we tolerate so that we can have a First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech and of association and of assembly. Some we tolerate. You must remember that the much maligned American Civil Liberties Union actually defended Nazis when they sought to march in Skokie, Illinois. Some of this we have to tolerate so that the rest of us can have some sort of free speech rights. Some sort of constitutional rights. The value of which I'm concerned to hear Supreme Court Justice nominee Sonia Sotomayor opine on. I'd like to know how vigorously she intends to defend the Fourth Amendment, how much how much weight she gives to the national security state. That's my concern. But no, it's just another day. It's just another murder in America. Just another dead young woman, just another dead baby, and just another crazed white guy, not even crazed, another maniacal white guy charged with the crime. So what? Well, here's the so what part. Michael John Parrish was a corrections officer at the Monroe County, Pennsylvania Correctional Facility. Yeah, he was a prison guard. That is the so what. They have infiltrated the military of the United States, and they have infiltrated our corrections and law enforcement departments. And you see them in law enforcement every day, most like. Skin-headed, roided-up, buffed-up the police officers are the order of the day. That's how you wind up with beatings and shootings and so forth that we get from law enforcement on a fairly routine basis. Imagine that. But why are you surprised? This is the same prison system that gave us Abu Ghraib, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Charles Grainer and Lindy England were prison guards, if I recall correctly, before they went to Iraq and participated in the national shame that was, and probably still is, our torture program. Yeah. And we know that the military is turning a blind eye to its personnel who are right-wing extremist terrorists, while at the same time ferreting out every last gay person they can find. What's that? We spent $1 million teaching you to fly an aircraft, but we spent $10 million teaching you to fly an aircraft, but you're gay. You got to get out. Oh, what's that? You've got a swastika tattoo and you're fighting for white pride in Iraq? You stay in. What a guy. Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? That's the America that the right wing yearned for. And that the right wing has largely succeeded in creating. That's also the first hour of the program. And you are welcome to jump in any old time. This is Activist Radio, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The Service Employees International Union continues to make strides when it comes to organizing hospitals and healthcare facilities in Massachusetts. Last week, more than 400 workers at Union Hospital in Lynn voted to join the local 1199 branch of the union. The successful organizing vote comes on the heels of a victory last month when the SEIU was granted the right to represent nearly 500 workers at Kearney Hospital in Boston. And 3 months ago, 800 workers at St. Elizabeth's Medical Center voted in favor of joining the union. The successful votes represent a sea change in the Boston area, where for decades no hospitals were unionized. Auto workers in Fenton, Missouri are ready to fight for their jobs and are calling on the community to join them. Workers at a Chrysler assembly plant in Fenton that watched as the last Dodge Ram was assembled more than a week ago are planning a Keep Jobs in America rally at the plant on July 24th. The jobs at the Fenton plant are being sent to Mexico and Michigan. Overall, Chrysler is closing 8 plants, and part of the rally will be protesting the company taking billions in federal bailout money as it shifts many jobs out of the United States. Target complains in an anti-union video that it's becoming a union target. Doug Cunningham reports.
Someday, you might come into work and find pickets telling guests to not shop at Target. Or you might read articles about unions threatening to boycott our stores. None of that helps you or any other team member. After all, every one of us depends on our guests for our jobs.
That's an excerpt from an anti-union video produced by Target stores. Never intended to be seen by the general public, it's making the rounds on the internet. In it, the giant retailer pushes anti-union propaganda at its workers while trying to maintain a friendly, we're all on the same team face. It's an effort to convince its workers that they don't need a union representing their interests, raising their wages, and improving their benefits. Target's Jim Rauter, identified in the video as Director of Labor Relations and Senior Counsel for Target, tells workers that Target wants to stay union-free.
The union would not improve anything at Target, not for our team members, not for our guests, and not for our company.
Target specifically mentions its grocery store operations in the video, a sign that it's afraid of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union.
Here is today's economic report. Older worker unemployment rates are on the rise. The unemployment rate for 55-year-olds and older jumped by 4.4% from May to June, in comparison to an increase of 1% among those under the age of 55. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the average length of time older workers are unemployed is 29.9 weeks. That's 8 weeks longer than the amount of unemployment time for younger workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two begins. Fascinating. I heard that earlier when I was downloading it, Labor Radio News. I heard that earlier today, the story about Target. And to be fair, just as a reminder, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that Walmart is the bad actor where American retail is concerned. Because they're not. They're a bad actor. They may be the worst, but frankly, they're not much different when it comes to the rights of working people. They're not that much different than Target. Now, you heard the excerpt from that video. Do you know what they did with it? Well, you see, because we do not take seriously in this country, because we don't take seriously the First Amendment right to freedom of association, which entails the freedom to not associate as well, if you work at Target, there's a chance at some point in time you were told to come to a team meeting. Because, see, you're not a worker. You're a member of a team. Granted, the guy that's the manager, he's the quarterback. Maybe you're a reserve tackle. Or some a utility infielder. But you're on a team. You're not a worker. Because the idea of being a worker has been stripped of its dignity by corporate America. You're not allowed to think of yourself as a worker anymore. You have to be a team member. Or you're an associate. Now, associates are at law firms and accounting firms, okay? Not at retail outlets where people are paid $6 and $7 and maybe $8. Oh boy, $10 an hour. And damn sure aren't allowed to have a union. No. Team member. What a bunch of psychobabble. But anyway, you might work for Target. And you'll get a little flyer. And it'll say, there's going to be a Target team meeting right after you get off work. Punch off the clock and come to the team meeting. Or maybe they'll have it while you're on the clock. But either way, if you don't go to the team meeting, it's your ass. They can and will fire you for not coming and sitting there while they browbeat you over how badly you don't want or need a union. And guess what? You don't have the right to get up and walk out. You do not have the right to not listen to anti-union BS unless you also want to exercise your right not to have a job. And there's just not a lot of people in this country right now that feel free enough to walk away from the ability to feed their families, such as they may. There was an attempt in the legislature a couple of years ago here in West Virginia to explicitly pass a law that said you do not have to put up with this anti-union rubbish, that you can get up and walk out. Guess what? Yeah, they passed around some money and some PAC donations and campaign contributions and ran some editorials that said that if people were free enough to walk out of an anti-union sleaze meeting, that West Virginia would become a hellhole for business. And I tell you about that happening in West Virginia because that's where I am. Don't think that because you're somewhere else, that doesn't also obtain. There are very few states that enshrine enshrine the right of a working person to get up and walk the hell out of a bunch of the corporatist propaganda. That, among other things, just to sort of make a tidy little bow of all of this, that's why Massey Fockers have to show up wearing their work clothes at rallies. They don't dare not come because it means their job. See, when you and I engage in some level of activism, it's usually because we feel a moral certitude about it and some sort of a commitment to an issue based upon not usually our wallets. We're liberals. We don't necessarily think that way. Usually it has to do with some instinct that rises from that common human core that we all share. And so we show up at a rally or a protest or a march, whether it be for health care or to end mountaintop removal or bring our military, as many of them, safe home, and all of them home one way or another from the ongoing nightmares in Iraq and Afghanistan. We do that because we search ourselves and we know that it is the morally right thing to do. The other side quite frequently shows up because they are threatened that they dare not. By example, there's a guy who is a coal industry, foreman, supervisor, manager, some sort, who shows up in Mary Lynn Evans' film Coal Country. And he sits there and he says, "My daughter goes to school. and they tell her that she needs to write an essay about why mountaintop removal is bad. And I tell my 9-year-old daughter when she comes home and tells me that, I said, well, why don't you tell your teacher just to go ahead and have you write an essay on why my daddy should lose his job?" Yeah, it's right there. Okay, yeah, I'm probably playing it. But no, he's sitting there whimpering and crying with the tears are rolling out of his face. And I guess I'm just a mean son of a... Because I looked at him and said, and I was just thinking to myself, Mister, how could you possibly put that kind of an emotional load on your own child? But then again, that's the kind of mindset that obtains inside corporate America. We are all just pawns. We are all just things to be consumed and spat out at the end of our usefulness. Whew. Golly, Ned. But you see, he does that because that is the mind poison that has been poured in through his ears and eyes for however long he's been involved in that corporate industry. And it's sad. And apparently now the man is catching hell from the other mountain removers around him for having participated in the film. Yep. But that's the America you live in. You are aware of it. Millions upon millions of others are not. Not aware that you have a First Amendment right of freedom to assembly and freedom of association that is also negative in its effect insofar as you have the right not to assemble and not to associate. Because you see, if that target, any given target, any Walmart, had a union inside it, then by virtue of the collective bargaining agreement, the local could say, hey, no, sorry, it's not in the agreement. You can't do it. And that would end it. And we don't have that. The Employee Free Choice Act would effectively affirm that right. And again, just to sort of recap, the first bill that Senator Franken signed on as a co-sponsor was the Employee Free Choice Act. Now we have to find out what it takes to turn Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, David Pryor of Arkansas, Mary Landrieu, Arlen Specter. We have to find out what it takes to turn them into Americans. We have to find out what it takes to turn them into people who actually support and defend the Constitution of the United States, because everything that's in the Employee Free Choice Act has within its core basic elements that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights, but that have been chipped away at over the years by corporate America. There's nothing in the Employee Free Choice Act that says Walmart has to have a union, or that Target does either, for that matter. All there is the opportunity for working people to form such a union, should they so choose. It is so simple as to beggar my comprehension why any American who loves his or her country would scoff at the need for something like that. But here it is, the 13th day of July. Harry Reid looked me in the eye and said, we will have a card check bill by summer. It's summer, Harry. We don't have a card check bill. We don't want a card check bill. We want the Employee Free Choice Act. And we don't have it. And we're still waiting. We can hope. But you know how the old saying goes, hope in one hand and in the other, and see which one fills up first. So there's that. The other little thing that broke over the weekend, do I want to go there yet, or do I want to go? Okay. No, let's finish off some of this hate stuff. I'm not sure, because I haven't seen a follow-up. But by now, the new head of the Young Republicans organization may very well be a woman who is about as hateful as they come, a sort of 38-year-old Coulter-esque wannabe. Her name is Audra Shea. And as of late last week, she was expecting to be elevated to the leadership of the Young Republicans over the weekend. On her Facebook page, which, by the way, if no one has ever told you, none of ever disappears. On her Facebook page, one of her friends wrote, and this is a quote, Obama bin Laden is the new terrorist. Muslim is on T-H-E-R-E side. Muslim is on their side. Need to take this country back from all of these mad coons and illegals. Audra Shea replied 8 minutes later, "You tell 'em, Eric, LOL." Yeah, that's the head of the College Republicans. But you really wouldn't expect anything more or less out of that gang of youngish thugs. She's 38, Audra Shea. This was the gang that crowed in delight after Paul Wellstone died in an airplane crash in talking about creating a Republican majority in the United States Senate. Said, well, we had to get rid of Paul Wellstone, and we did. You know, you might just sort of write it off and say, ah, well, that kind of crazy crap shows up on a Facebook page. But that's not all there is. In October 2008, you remember the story about the folks who hung an effigy of Sarah Palin outside their home in Hollywood for Halloween decorations. Audra Shea wrote, what? No Obama in a noose? Come on now, it's just freedom, F-R-E-E-D-O-M-E. I told you, they're not real sharp. Of speech, no one in Atlanta would take that wrong, LOL. I hate LOL. I'm going to try to make sure I don't put it in any more emails. The following morning, she came back, you know, like a dog returning to it. She came back and said, apparently I could not spell last night. I am wondering if the guys with the Palin noose would care if we had a bunch of homosexuals in a noose. Time after time after time, numerous posts, Audra Shea says that President Obama is, quote, anti-American, unquote. And she prattles on about his disdain of this country. Yeah. Oh, it goes on. Remember, the leader of the college, not college, but the leader of the young Republicans. Let's see, back on June the 30th, she went off the rails again, talking about President Obama and how he handled or didn't handle the Honduran crisis. She wrote, and I quote, this is an outrage, and I cannot believe this nation has him as our leader. It makes me sick. My disdain for Obama is directly proportionate for his disdain of this country. So then somebody chimes in on her page and responds to what she's just written and says, here's what I am getting tired of. If you call Obama a socialist, terrorist, anti-American, whatever, then you're kind of calling me that, too, because I voted for him and support him for the most part. Or you can claim that I didn't really know what I voted for, and in so doing, you're kind of saying I'm ignorant and questioning my intelligence. That's a guy named Derek Moss, allegedly writing. She responds, this would-be leader of the young Republicans. I think that you are ignorant if you believe this man is anything but anti-American. He freely writes about Marxist philosophies. That's writes as R-I-G-H-T-S. I never called him a terrorist, but if his policies are socialist, which they are, then what would you call him? His actions speak very loudly, and his actions are very anti-American. You just cannot get past it. You might not like it, but the truth is what it is. On and on and on. And, you know, the Young Republicans, they're not exactly a small group. Granted, they're still part of that weird rump of the American body politic that remains of the Republican Party. This stuff's all over the place. By the way, one of Audra Shea's most ardent supporters is Louisiana Governor Piyush Jindal. And all of a sudden, his support for her seems to be waning a little bit because the governor's traveling and can't make time to comment on this. Grover Norquist, the guy who likes to throttle things in bathtubs, drown things in bathtubs. Yeah, Grover. His spokesman said, well, he's friends with Audra on Facebook like he's friends with everybody else. He accepts all friendships. Yeah. Remember. We need to take this country back. You know, we talked about that a few nights ago. The hate is boiling up like some sort of suppurating sore. And it is oozing all over the country. How's about, and of course, you'll find no surprise in this. If you want to get really dirty and just absolutely head to toe covered in right wing filth, you know the place to go. Yeah, sure you do. Free Republic. Freeperville has been the nastiest right-wing place on the intertube webs for a long, long time. But every now and then, they reach down and show you just how low they can go. They sort of peel the skin back on the mask of what little restraint they have and show you the vicious, dripping, fanged monster that is conservatism. A photo came out not too long back of Malia Obama. You know, adolescent. And in it, she is walking in what appears to be a crowd. And she's wearing a T-shirt, a white T-shirt, with a great big peace symbol on it. You remember the peace symbol. You remember the Vietnam era. Being a child during that era and being sternly admonished that, of course, this was in the basement of the Southern Baptist Church, that was anti-American. That's a mockery of the passion of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ who died for our sins. It's an upside-down broken cross. No, dummy, that's the swastika. We've already talked about that. It's a broken cross. Anybody who wears that can't be a Christian. So apparently, that symbol is making a return. If not the actual principle for which it stands. And the photo was picked up and a thread was made out of it over at Freeperville, the vilest place on the internet. And these disgusting bigots attacked without, you know, we talked, you know, I admit it. We talked about it when the Bush twins, you know, Barbie and Jenna, would go out and drink and roll on floors and get all liquored up underage in bars. We talked about it. Sure. They were young adults. They weren't 21 and old enough to drink, but they were damn sure over 18. Malia Obama is not over 18. One of the comments by a right-winger regarding that photograph, well, she's a typical street whore. Look at them. Bunch of ghetto thugs. Ghetto street trash. And then this gem. Wonder when she'll get her first abortion. There was another photo on the thread of Michelle Obama talking to Malia, and it had been captioned, "To entertain her daughter, Michelle Obama loves to make monkey sounds." Now, bear in mind that many in this country consider Free Republic to simply be a grassroots discussion board for the conservative movement. You know, we're not talking about the Vinlanders or the Firm 22 like we were in the murder story earlier in the program. No. Those are right-wing hate groups, right? You know, those are practically Nazis. They are Nazis. They wear swastikas. They have it inked onto their skin, for the love of God. But this is Free Republic. This is a grassroots... But that's where conservatism is in America now. They make me sick. The whole family. Mammy, Pappy, the freeloading mammy-in-law, the misguided chillin', and especially little cuz. This is not the America I want representing my peeps. Could you imagine what world leaders must be thinking seeing this kind of street trash and that we paid for this kind of street ghetto trash to go over there? It is said that out of the first 100 postings to that thread, only one comment objected to the hatred, the bigotry, the prejudice, and the racism. Them poor kids, I hope they're not punished with a baby. Hopefully they won't deal cocaine like the Kenyan. Kids didn't pay. One person said, we should steer clear of Obama's children. They can't help it if their old man is an anti-American hating Marxist pig. Someone else responded to that and said, The kids didn't pick their commie pinko pansy of a father, nor did they choose to be put into the spotlight. But Obama Sotoro is fair game, and so is his witch of a wife. Fair game. Yeah, I sure hope the Secret Service is keeping a close eye on these murderous thugs. Because I got a feeling they got more than their hands full trying to protect Renegade from them. Dirtbags. All of them. The White House is now a joke to the rest of the world. We have no respect, and this is not going to turn out well. Mark my words, we will be hit and much worse than last time. We are now seen as weak and vulnerable. Ghetto and Chicago thugs have taken over. You can hear them praying for the terrorist attack if you listen real close, can't you? Yeah, you can. Another poster said, poor libs. Too late. The battle has been joined. Whew. See, they know. They know what they're doing, and they know what they want. And they're not afraid to say it. But if you point out that they're right-wing terrorists, they scream that their First Amendment rights are being violated. I keep telling you, they're coming. They mean you no good. They mean you no good at all. And here in the summer of 2009, they kill in churches. They kill when they open their doors. They kill in museums. They kill... kill, kill, kill. That's what we're dealing with. You want another example? Let's try Jason Matera. Jason Matera is the spokesman for the Young Americas Foundation. Got a lot of nerve. I know a lot of Young America, and they're not anything like Jason Matera. In the wake of the opening of the Sotomayor hearings today, Jason Matera has posted the following on his Facebook page. If Sotomayor gained life experience from the ghetto, does that mean she'd have a tendency to shank Scalia? Oh, that's just them conservatives. Ain't they got a sense of humor? Yeah, he's young enough to be in the Young America, be the spokesperson, spokescreep for the Young America Foundation, and I'm sure he's all in support military. But he's not in uniform. And there's nothing to indicate that he ever has been. But given current recruiting trends, there's no reason to think he wouldn't fit right in. Does that mean she'd have a tendency to shank Scalia? No, see, Jason, you young fascist. Your side does that stuff. Not ours. Not ours. Hate upon hate upon hate upon hate. Yearning for death. Yearning for murder. That's where they are. Diane writes in and says, the peace sign's a broken cross? What the hell? I've never heard of that. Well, you didn't grow up in the basement of a Southern Baptist church in Alabama, Diane. Most people were just writing to me in slack-jawed amazement. What? What, Bob? Jesus didn't drink real wine? What? Yeah, we were taught that, too. But I spent way too much time on that, so we'll just keep moving. But yeah, really. So there's that. That little bit of hate. It's all over the place. It's like some sort of poop storm of hate. It's like a hate volcano has erupted somewhere in the bowels of the Republican National Committee, and it's just spewing forth all over the country. Even, like this is a surprise, Pat Buchanan, can't even stay away from the eliminationist rhetoric. Young Levi Johnston, the 19-year-old father of Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnston, whatever. Funniest thing Bart Kopp ever wrote, honest to God. I still chuckle when I read that. Appeared on NBC's Today Show. Johnston did. And said, among other things, that after they lost the election, see, the Godzilla from Wasilla really thought they were going to win. She didn't realize that she was a placeholder. She didn't realize that she and John were being set up as patsies and chumps because the Republican Party had no interest whatsoever in having the presidency after George Bush had gotten done robbing, and his cronies, of course, had gotten done robbing us all blind. They didn't want to deal with the problems. It's much easier to sit back and point fingers and play what the Bush administration used to euphemistically refer to as the blame game. No, Godzilla from Wasilla thought she was going to be the vice president and that she was only going to be one weak little heartbeat away. One more good skin cancer away from being the president. And Levi Johnston talked about the fact that she moped around the house and didn't seem to have any interest in being the governor of Alaska no more. It's just sad, isn't it? And then he also said that if she ran for president, Levi said, that he probably wouldn't vote for Mussolini. So then, in response to that, Pat Buchanan, the guy who goes and orders two pairs of Brooks Brothers shoes a year and they know the size, wears them everywhere but to bed and the shower, Pat Buchanan showed up on Morning Joe today, where he opined about young Levi Johnston. Like I said, it's more of the same.
Take it to Nora and try and pick apart here what's going on, barring what Levi Johnston has to say.
Well, first, with regard to Levi, I think first dude up there in Alaska, Todd Palin, ought to take Levi down to the creek and hold his head underwater until the thrashing stops. Now, let me...
Ho, 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 ho. Just listen to the people in the for-profit media. Dang, did you hear that? Old Pat just called for first dude Todd to go and drown Levi Johnston. Oh, I tell you what. Oh, that's some gut-busting funnies what that is. I mean, you can't get funny. Yeah, you know, Seinfeld was funny, but that's funnier, Pat. Holy, God almighty, what a bunch of psychos. Listen to the laughter.
Dude up there in Alaska, Todd Palin, ought to take Levi down to the creek and hold his head underwater until the thrashing stops. Now, let me talk about
that's
Sarah
a reality
Palin.
Show, oh, right?
Okay.
There.
But, and just to clarify,
that was Mark Helprin from Time Magazine who said that's a reality show right there. Can you imagine that? Now, you know the extreme high regard in which we at the Horn, and I in particular, and a couple other people, hold the late, great Bill Hicks. Bill Hicks, toward the end of his life, had his heart absolutely broken by someone he admired and respected, namely David Letterman. Because he came and taped a segment for the a segment of the Letterman show, and Letterman pulled it and would not let it air. The reason he wouldn't let it air is in part because Bill Hicks began that segment by saying, "Hey everybody, yeah, I hadn't been around in a while, been really really busy. It's really great to see you guys. I always love to be back in New York." Comic banter. Yeah, I've been busy. I finally got my first TV show. Yeah, it's good. I've shot the pilot, and it's going to air in the fall, and it's really cool, and I hope you'll all watch. It's called Let's Hunt and Kill Billy Ray Cyrus. And that was unacceptable. That was unacceptable on a comedy talk program. However, on a news program on MSNBC, it is not only acceptable for a professional for-profit political pundit of long patronage to suggest that a man in Alaska hold another man's head underwater until the thrashing stops, in other words, until he is drowned and dead. It's not only acceptable to say that, the rest of the for-profit media just thinks it's a hoot.
I think first dude up there in Alaska, Todd Palin, ought to take Levi down to the creek and hold his head underwater until the thrashing stops. Now, let me talk about
that's
Sarah
a reality
Palin.
Show, right? Okay.
Yeah. But then they realized, especially Mika Brzezinski, that sitting there and laughing about premeditated first-degree murder, revenge killing, if you will. Gosh, and I thought we were so much better than those heathens in Iraq. They do that honor revenge killing stuff all the time, don't they? Yeah, but they're, you know how they are. I mean, they're not Americans. What was that? They don't value life like we do. Right. That Pat Buchanan, he just breaks me up. Yeah, then suddenly it dawned on Mika Brzezinski that maybe that wasn't the... that maybe she needed to backtrack a little bit.
To clarify Pat's incredible statement about Levi, Morning Joe does not advocate any violence against Levi Johnson or anyone else related to the Palin story. That was priceless, Pat.
God almighty! Oh, that was priceless, Pat. Sitting there doing a disclaimer. Doing a disclaimer and chuckling about the advocacy of murder. At the same time. Mom. But that's what you get from the for-profit media. Hell, Levi Johnston's not even a liberal as far as I can tell. Oh, by the way, one of the other things that he said was that at one point in time, Sarah had said she wanted to take a gig on a reality TV show, but the family vetoed her. Yeah. Because that's what it all was for Sarah Palin. It was one big reality TV show where she got lots of, those are just Marvy, those new duds from Neiman Marcus, don't you know? And maybe she could get another $22,000 an hour makeup artist and wear lots of glitter and rhinestones. Hey. You know, Pat, why don't you go up to Alaska and send us back some essays like you did about Nixon, about Sarah Palin taking long introspective walks on the beach. But no. No, the specialty, the spécialité de la maison of the right wing today is murder. What Shakespeare called heady murder. Classy bunch, those pro-life Republicans, huh? Gotta love them. Wow, this has been a two-hour filibobster. Is it going to be a three-hour filibobster? It's entirely up to you. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice activist radio like no other. This is The Horn.
I'm We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Three past the hour. I feel like I need a shower. Oh, let's not start that rhyming business, please. But, you know, we catalog it so routinely and so regularly that the right-wing hate becomes, I fear, for us, obvious. But you got to remember, there's a lot of the country that doesn't know anything about this. That's what makes it all the more important that we educate ourselves so that when the Adkissons and the what's his killer up in D.C. and the guy that shot... See what happens to my memory? The guy who shot Dr. Tiller. When they pop up again and again and again and again, it is incumbent upon us to be the ones who stand on the ramparts and scream if we must. We told you they were like this. We told you. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. Oh, so what? You haven't been having any phone calls today?
No. It's been a 2-hour filibobster.
Well, I heard, yeah, the Buchanan thing, yeah, that, you know what, these people are beyond scary, and it's like normalized, which is really disturbing. He's advocating killing some kid because...
Yeah, a 19-year-old.
Because he, you know, bad-mouthed that dumbass?
That's about the size of it.
And that man who said, oh, please, Bin Laden, detonate something here, well, what's wrong with these people?
Well, but some of this stuff is just it's leadership by example because you know when you've got people like that godforsaken clown who showed up on what was it, Glenn Beck or O'Reilly, they all run together for me and said, well, you know, the best hope of America right now is for Bin Laden to detonate a device.
Yeah, no, that was on Glenn Beck and isn't he some sort of Sawyer, that's right.
Sawyer, yeah, yeah.
He was he actually worked for the the national security state. That's what's disturbing about him. It's not just some windbag like Buchanan. This guy was a employee of the security state advocating that. It's really just that really disturbed me. I'm like, huh?
But so why would we why are we surprised if somebody picks that theme up and runs with it?
Well, see, I hate to jump back to history again, but this is the only way I'm able to sort of digest all this crap. I keep thinking, wait a minute, where am I? I'm in America where they, you know, did genocide on Native people and enslaved folks. You know what I'm saying? We want to think that we've advanced and, evolved. But I kind of wonder really what's going on, because we don't have the Wild West to let off steam anymore. You know, back in the day when shit got hot in this country, just send these people out west, give them free land, right?
Yeah, where they can go and kill each other over water and barbed wire and sheep versus cattle.
Right, well, you know, but there's no valve to release now. You see what I mean? I mean, it's all sort of...
No, they got to sit and... Now they just sit and boil and they watch the TV box tell them that... But then again, you know, I was with those thugs in the theater screaming at a movie screen. That's... There's like PhD psychology degree work in this stuff.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, but it's just, but it's what bugs me though is the for-profit media is a joke. And if that's our guidepost, you know, we're in serious trouble, you know, because.
You know, and
they're
well,
bankrupt, you know.
Yeah, we are.
Bankrupt.
As far as the for-profit media are concerned, you know, this is where you bring Bob Dylan out on the stage with his electric guitar to play "It's All Over, Baby Blue" and move on. Because, you know, I'm not nearly, you know, that's Pat Buchanan. I expect, you know, Pat Buchanan would be the first one to put the match to the gas flame in the ovens. Okay, that's just Pat Buchanan. But the rest of that crowd sitting there cackling like hens laying eggs and guffawing and hee-hawing like somebody just told a real knee slapper, those are the ones that disturb me, Sam.
Oh, no, I agree. I mean, Buchanan is what he is. He's a you know, a racist, xenophobic, Holocaust denier. So we know what his scene is, but you know, the sort of just slap him on the back, oh, hoo hoo, yuck, yuck, you're so funny, Pat. No, that isn't funny. That's really scary. But at the same time...
Because, see, bad things can happen to 19-year-old young men in Alaska. It's a brutal place to be 19.
Yeah, no, and it's just sort of... I mean, if that's his response to that Levi just running his mouth, I mean, you know, it's just, it's a bit heavy. You understand what I mean? It's kind of frightening. But that's their idea of humor. Now.
But this is a guy who spent his youth listening to Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger talking about assassination squads and death squads and illegal bombing raids and.
Yeah. No. Exactly. No,
you know. I mean, you can hardwire a brain to be a certain way.
Yeah. No. I mean, it is. It's definitely. Not surprising, but it's still kind of shocking, and it disturbs me, because then we have doctors being assassinated and churches being shot up. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And there was a clip out there, and I don't have it handy right now, but there was a clip out there last week of, I believe, Joan Walsh making, or maybe it's even older than that, making Bill O'Reilly just
eat it. Oh, yeah, no,
her.
Yeah.
You know,
and he looked like he wanted to murder that poor woman.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to look at that short film?
Yes, I did.
What did you think? Isn't that interesting?
It's fascinating. It's absolutely.
I was like, yikes. I mean, the homeboy was really articulate and sort of mild. The Marine who was talking,
mm-hmm.
Very scary, but he was lucid, you know?
You know, it's not. It's the ones who are sitting there, you know, and they just talk, and you know, just like you and me talking here. Those are the scary ones.
Yeah, I'm saying. It's just like. You know what, dude? You sound like you're together, but my God, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Anyway.
No, but it is highly recommended. You know, I think I may take the link and shoot it over and see if we can get it put up on the website.
Yeah, well, no, and Hedges, that dude, he really is. He looked totally spent. I was like, damn, he has a little baby, too. You know, I just think, Jesus, this guy, you know.
Well, the people who actually do the work of trying to get this stuff out there, they do get exhausted, Sandra.
Well, I forget that he was a 20-year war correspondent.
Yeah, he's
seen a lot.
Yeah, he's been down that road. And when you get shocked... Or when you're a grizzled veteran of that kind of stuff and you're the one sitting there going, what? Yeah, to in another entirely separate way, There was some incredulity. I don't know if you saw the stuff with Bill Moyers and the guy from the former insurance executive, healthcare company executive. But there was a certain degree of that, you know, I'm as jaded can be, and I know how rotten this government can be, and I know what's going wrong. All those things that Bill Moyers know, and yet when he's interviewing him, there's a little bit of that mouth hanging open, catching flies effects, too.
And it's amazing with him, because Bill Moyers has been around. You know, he was the one that sort of organized or designed that famous ad that destroyed Goldwater.
Yes.
Bill Moyers seen a lot. So, yeah, and he's a religious man. So for I've seen him interview people where he still has that sort of drop jaw look. And it's amazing that the shit can get so deep that it can move people like him or Hedges. You know what I mean? And it's just right. So we're not going crazy, Bob. I'm telling you. Shit is out there.
No, and this is not, you know, this is not faux outrage, and this is not, you know, oh, you know, let's try to create an issue where there isn't one. This kind of stuff really is. It's bubbling all over the landscape.
No, there's no need to feign anything. All of it is absolutely genuine, at least as far as I'm concerned, because, I mean, you know, as jaded as I may sound, obviously I care. You know what I'm saying?
I know you do.
I'm also quite stunned, like that little thing I sent you. I was sitting there thinking, my God, this country is full of people like that and their ideas and their, you know.
Sure, how does a guy, honest to God, was he wearing like some sort of hazmat suit or something that covered up all the ink? How does a guy with Hitler tattooed on his arm get hired as a corrections officer in Pennsylvania? How does that happen? I mean, they're up above his collar. He had to have, like, a full toboggan cap on or a ski mask or something because he's got, like, Hitler on the back of his neck. It's like an old... some sort of twisted version of an old Monty Python skit. It's tattooed on the back of his neck.
Well, no, but, I mean, people, you know, we're all outraged with the Abu Ghraib and the Gitmo and stuff, but... they seem to forget the 2.2 million people we have locked up here in the endless prisons. I mean, what do you think goes on in those prisons in America? It's not tiddlywink.
No, it's not.
And it sounds horrific. All the people I know who spent any time in prison in this country, I can barely listen to some of the things they've told me. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
My ears can't handle it.
And that's, you know, that's kind of what goes on here insofar as, you know, I see this stuff and it happens over the weekend and I'm like, Jesus, please, Monday, get here. I gotta get this out of it because you sit there with your computer and it stares back at you and you're like, and you keep waiting for some, no, we got this one wrong, but nobody's getting it wrong. This is right. This is correct. This is factual stuff. Our country has an undercurrent of right-wing fascist extremism that most of us, I fear, Sandra, are afraid to even contemplate.
Well,
because
yeah,
if these suckers ever get together and decide, you know, that there's, you know, and now do it, what an ugly wake up we got.
Well, I was just thinking about the, you know, the various times when we've had, like, the, all, I can only, other way I can describe it is, like, mass movements. Say the original Populist Party, where they organized the farmers, you know, like, real movement in this country.
Yeah, like the thing that generated the penny auctions.
Well, right, I mean, it's just like, this is, we're at a time where we need that sort of response, and I fear that people have totally unlearned that ability in this country. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't really know, but it just seems like it's one outrage after another.
Well, it is, but it's facilitated. Sandra, it's facilitated too. Okay, so we've got this Nazi subcurrent running through the right wing in this country, and they're becoming more and more active, and they're becoming more and more unafraid to stand outside the shadows. And so consequently, the next thing, then you get a book by Jonah Goldberg saying, well, Nazis are really socialists. They're really left-wing liberals. And it goes to the top of the New York Times charts, even if it's got one of those stupid little daggers by it. You know, it's right. In a lot of people's hands. And so consequently, a nation that, once upon a time you said the word fascist to them, and they were ready to go and just kill the snot out of something. Now you say fascist to them, and the mainstream or for-profit media have been complicit in telling people that fascists are liberals.
Yeah, no, that's incredible and so warped. I mean, I don't even know what to say about that.
So, you know, it should come as no surprise, because that's what scares me. You know, had it been my father's generation, you show them a fascist, and they know what a fascist looks like, because, you know, they saw among other things, I don't know if you ever saw that great American propaganda series, Frank Capra's Why We Fight. It's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant for what it is. They took, Frank Capra shot almost no footage of his own. They took all the propaganda films coming out of Nazi Germany, and Frank Capra edited them together into a propaganda reel that showed why fascism had to be destroyed once and for all. And you know, my father's generation had seen all that stuff. They knew what fascists looked like. They knew what they sounded like. They knew what their issues were. They knew how they talked, how they walked, you know, goose step. And as a consequence, when they saw it, they shunned it. You know, Barry Goldwater had some undeniably fascist underpinnings. And that's why he was so thoroughly stomped at the polls in 1964. It wasn't all just, you know, JFK hangover.
Well, no, and listen, and when Spain, when they attacked Spain and blew up all those trains and killed 200 people, when their government started blaming this, that, or another, then people saw Franco, and they immediately dismissed them. They voted him out of office. Goodbye.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this is going to make me seem terribly, terribly shallow, but I got to watch a little bit of television yesterday, and one of the few channels I watched, the Travel Channel, was running a whole bunch of Tony Bourdain episodes. And they showed his episode in Spain.
Mm.
And in the course of that program, you could tell he was really happy being where he was. There are other episodes where he's like, oh, Jesus Christ, how did I get here? But he was in Spain, and he made this comment. And Tony, you know, he has an unusual degree of perspicacity for the feel of a locale. And he said, all over Spain, there is a joy all over Spain. There is an excitement about the present and the future. And he's talking about the cooking culture and the food culture and the artistic culture and just, you know, it was like he left a sentence unsaid. But what I was left with, and it's probably as much me as it was him, probably more so, was that, of course, that attitude is blossoming all over Spain. They are coming out from under fascist rule.
And they recognized it right away, and when they had the opportunity, they got rid of it. Because this Anzar, whoever was in power beforehand and sent their people over to Iraq, they got rid of them people. I mean, Franco was only generation and a half ago, you know.
Oh yeah, I remember when it was a joke on Saturday Night Live. Good evening, this is Weekend Update. Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead.
Right. I mean, so it's not, you know, it's real serious business for them over there. But I mean, here we're battling against so much you know, ignorance, and when they can look at Glenn Beck and not see a fascist, we're in trouble, you know. I mean, that is.
But I think that's a uniquely American phenomenon, Sandra, because who was it that said when fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross?
Yeah, no, was it Lewis?
Sinclair Lewis, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
It might have been Henry Wallace. I'm not sure. But
somebody like that. I mean, yeah.
But the thing is, that is indeed that's indeed what happened. And just as, you know, just as Hitler made a number of speeches before and during his rise to power, talking about the basic decent Christian nature of the German people, and then proceeded to pervert that, turn it on its ear, and welcome to the Second World War. That's what's going on here. You know what? I haven't even touched on it because I kind of assume that everybody else has been or will be, and I don't want to just do everybody else's show. But this business with Dick Cheney has me absolutely tearing at my freaking hair. You know, the guy was running a goddamn death squad.
Yeah, no, I mean, that it's what it is. I mean, if you know what? If that holder is even entertaining the idea of going rogue, i.e. doing his damn job, you know this shit must be crazy, bro.
Entertaining? Entertaining? I don't want any entertaining. I want a special prosecutor, and I want him heavily armed, because they're going to come kill him.
Well, no, but it's just sort of, you know, let's not drop any trial balloons. This is your job, Mr. Holden. And after you represented Cheetah Banana against these four people who were brutalized by him in Colombia, I have my doubts about Mr. Holden.
Yeah, okay?
I'll be honest with you.
I had an email from our buddy Maura, and she pointed me toward that Newsweek article saying that he was entertaining the notion. And Maura was saying, you know, I have real hopes that maybe the American people and letters like the ones I wrote have actually gotten through to him. And I, God almighty, I hope she's right. I want the guy to do the right thing. And frankly, doing the right thing's easy on this.
No, but I can't deal with the Beltway discussion about, oh, it's going to throw this or another. You know, he is independent of all these branches. He is supposed to do the job for the American people. So just the notion that, oh, he has to, he don't have to consider Obama. He looks at if the law was broken. Obviously, it's so bad if it's being discussed, because I expected them to try their best to hush it like they have been doing. But it just keeps bubbling up. Now we find out this bitch was running an assassination agency. They can't let it go. You know, I guess it's as bad as we think, you know?
And, you know, you want to know how bad it is, Sandra? I got how bad it is right here. The spin machine has already cranked up from Shea Cheney.
No doubt.
According to Think Progress today, Liz Cheney, who is now apparently her daddy's little attack blonde, has come out and said, I mean, if they want to go to the American people and say that they disagree with the notion that we ought to be capturing and killing al-Qaeda leaders, I think it's just going to prove to the American people one more time why they can't trust the Democrats with our national security.
Well, no, she better watch it before they come out and say exactly what al-Qaeda was fiction of the CIA initially, wasn't it? I mean, they don't want the digging to start, because once they open that, I don't know where it ends. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and but all this stuff sort of, and, you know, sometimes I feel like the Russell Crowe character in A Beautiful Mind, you know, where he's got little snippets from Highlights for Children and the TV Guide and Women's Wear Daily pasted all over the wall, and he's finding the giant conspiracy in it.
Well, yeah,
But by the same token, I see a news report over the weekend saying, 7 Christian churches have now been bombed in Iraq. One of the churches was in an area largely infested by al-Qaeda in Iraq. And again, it was one of those stomp your foot, stub your toe, kick in the door facing moments. Dadgummit, it, al-Qaeda in Iraq, it's 2009. We know there wasn't any such thing. Not before George started his war.
No, this is like
al-Qaeda in Iraq was a marketing ploy.
Like Goldstein, you know, that's what I'm saying about Liz Cheney and her bellowing. It's like, you know what, hon, you might want to, you know, tone it down a bit. But
she's not toning it down, Sandra, because now she's saying, well, you know, I could be open to running for office.
Oh, please, you know, I'm sorry, I can't really take it seriously with that one. But I do think that, I don't know, Holden, can I say that I'll be surprised if it materializes?
So will I. So will I. But I think, you know, by the same token, this is for those who are interested and those who actually, you know, give a damn, this is an advocacy moment. This is one of our rubber meets the road moments, because we need to make it abundantly clear to Eric Holder that we're tired, we don't want any entertaining. You hire the guy, hire him yesterday, empower him with the full weight and power of the federal government and the entire and the entire the Justice Department and get him absolutely up to his eyeballs in the filth that was the Bush administration and Dick Cheney's role in it, and prosecute, try, and sentence.
Well, no, but they must be getting hella pressure, Bob, because remember that poll a while back that said that 60-something-odd percent of Americans really want them to look into the Bush administration crimes?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's real, like the health care. You get 60, 70% of American people agreeing on anything. That's, it's incredible. You see what I mean? It's incredible consensus. And on both these issues, the people are speaking. I think that there must be a lot of pressure coming down. Because I'm surprised.
Is this President Obama's make me moment?
I don't know what the hell it is, you know. But yeah, maybe you can. But he's nothing. He's not. I'm not ready to give him much credit on this one. Isn't this independent decision by?
By Holder,
it's
supposed to be.
And we've been so conditioned for the last 8 years with the AG being just some appendage of the executive. This is like sort of a spin your head moment for me. I've forgotten that, oh, that's right, the Attorney General can operate independently by law.
What would you think, Sandra, because if you recall, it was right after George W. Bush was installed in office that the independent counsel statute ran out.
Well, yeah, I was just about to go there. Right.
Is it time to put a little heat on Congress and say, you know, pass one of these again? Because we can't wait. We can't, you know, if the Attorney General proves unwilling, then by God, Congress should pass it.
The thing is the Congress, you know, once again gutted its ability to function by getting rid of that, you know, on one level.
Well, yeah, well, it expired and they declined to extend it.
Well, yeah, but you know, because they went through the whole Clinton ordeal.
Right.
But then we had eight years of free reign where these people ran amok. I don't know what they need to do. He needs to just go ahead and appoint someone. But I fear it's just going to be low-hanging fruit too if they do.
Oh, you mean go for the easy bust?
Well, I hope it's not. But see, that would be I know I keep being.
No, I want him to go after Cheney till his damned artificial heart's beating the damn Macarena. Okay, I mean I'm just that mean.
Well, once again, the fact that he was out every day a while back, remember how he was always on TV, Cheney?
Mm-hmm.
You know, told me that, oh, wait a minute, this isn't the role of the former vice president. You know, something must be really wrong. I thought something was really odd when he was out there 24/7 earlier.
Yeah, this is typically the role of an unindicted co-conspirator.
Well, yeah, he's acting like he's guilty. I don't know. We'll see, but listen, I must read this one little first line of an article. It says, they may be the most efficient workers in the world, but in the global downturn, they're having a tough time finding jobs. They're talking about robots?
Your kid, oh my.
And it's so scary.
I thought it was going to be Mexicans.
No, the first line, it's like, are you the most efficient? You know, what are you talking about? And this whole article is talking about Japan and the downturn and how it's affecting the robots. It's just sick to equate them with workers. And then this other article is talking about crisis spur people to work for free, good or bad.
Or bad?
Yes. It's sort of giving, like, there's some sort of debate about in some instances, people should be working for free. I mean, this system is gone. It's gone. It's a whack job. I mean, I just read this article and I was just sort of stunned by how cavalier.
God, what periodical is this from?
No, this is from Reuters.
You know what's next? An article: involuntary servitude. Is it all that bad?
No, it's just incredible. this woman says, in some cases, companies might be getting the better end of it by having unpaid workers, but it's nice to have something to occupy yourself with and when speaking to prospective employers. It's nice to say, I haven't just been sitting around all day. I've actually been doing something. This is some young woman who can't find a job. She's a graduate from Cornell. I'm like, what are they teaching in college now, Bob? What kind of idiot?
I'm guessing she didn't take that whole labor history course.
Well, no, but it's just stunning. And they go on to talk about how at British Airways, they ask their employees to volunteer for up to a month unpaid work.
God almighty.
And so this is, you know what I mean?
I mean, but, you know, we know that Walmart and Target and the likes of them do that all the time, you know, clock out and then go unload the truck.
Right. It's in, but this one person reminded and said, it's illegal for commercial companies not to pay workers. By the way, dumbasses. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And the fact that this article is framing it as even
a legitimate discussion?
Right. This is, you know, this is just not good. It's like, oh, wait a minute. We've got robots who are the most efficient workers. That's free labor. And then we have, you need to start working for free to keep your job articles. So,
something wicked this way comes, Sandra.
Oh, I just, you know, I'm just sort of, you know, stupefied and horrified when your whole goal is to always be compensated for your labor.
Do we?
That's just job.
Well, right,
job
where the labor of the working class is all they have with which to bargain.
No, if I'm working a startup company, the key is it's my startup company. I can work until I'm blue in the face, right?
Right.
But if I have someone work for me, they need to be compensated. I mean, it's just...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you've heard our buddy Wayne from time to time. His job is to go out there and find people, find places where employers are screwing people. And we've got a Department of Labor in this state that will go after employers who cheat their workers out of wages.
Okay. Well, right. And so to see this sort of propaganda being put out there, it's just frightening. We'll give you this last headline. French workers threaten to blow up factory. They said, if you don't give us our damn severance payout by the 31st, we're going to blow up the place. They have bombs hidden throughout the plant. You know, God bless the goddamn French, okay?
Yeah.
That shit had me rolling. I'm like, oh, snap. They said they will blow it up. You can bail out banks. We want our goddamn pay. I was rolling. I just thought, oh, my God. But that's the French. Because the people support that kind of behavior. You know what I'm saying? They write okay with it.
Because there's a greater sense of community there, I think.
I don't
mean to talk in you know, high-minded social science terms or anything, but people understand that their lives are tied to the lives of others.
Well, no, they said if Renault and PSA refuse to give us that money, it could blow up before the end of the month. I was like, damn, they're not playing. You know, they've been kidnapping bosses and stuff. I don't know. It's all chaotic, but I wish I just want to see some of that here, Bob, you know? Instead of people gunning down people...
Well, how far... And that's ultimately, that's the question, Sandra. How far does the pendulum have to swing to the anti-worker right before it even moves a nickel's worth in the other direction toward the rights of working people?
No, those people here will shoot each other up, beat their wives, kill their kids first, before turning it to the proper place, which is these rapacious... owners of capital, if I may go there.
Let me just share another moment of one more moment of outrage with you. And of course, you know what a one trick pony I am. So I get up this morning, and I see on the email list that I'm on that there's an editorial in the Charleston paper by a vice president of the International Coal Group. You remember ICG? These are the guys who brought you the Sago disaster. Remember that?
Oh God,
And he's all in a conniption because of this study that has recently come out, peer reviewed, mind you, that says that basically, to boil it down, for every dollar that coal brings into West Virginia, it costs us $5.25 in overall negative effects of having that industry. You know, from health to poverty to early death, maimings, pollution, just everything that coal does to Appalachia.
Right.
And so this guy's desperate to do some damage control. And he said, well, there was a 2001 study that said the biggest cause of illness is poverty. So it goes without saying that poverty is deadly. And I was just reading that thing with my mouth hanging open. I can't believe that a highly paid coal company executive would actually have the gall to publish something like that. Poverty is deadly? You know, what the hell sort of damn Dickens novel did this SOB crawl out of? And then he has the nerve to say, coal is a bridge to prosperity for West Virginia. Bridge? Bridge? You know, and so I immediately fired off a letter to the editor saying, yeah, it's a bridge, all right. It's a bridge to nowhere. You know, 120 years of damn near involuntary servitude. And, you know, well, the prosperity's going to get here any day.
Yeah, right. No, I was about to say, we are talking about the same place, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Oh, please. Okay, wow. That is pretty freaking...
Well, I tell you what, when the show's over, Sandra, I will send the link out, we'll put it on the website, and I'll shoot it along to you, too.
Yeah, I know.
Because just to read corporate America talking like that.
Ugh.
Poverty's deadly? Then quit making the poverty, you ass.
Wow, no, but don't forget the profit that Goldman Sachs is about to post up.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's like $2.2 billion in one quarter.
Wow, that's Exxon money.
That's a lot of money.
That's a bunch. Are we getting any of that back?
Who knows? You know, they'll probably, turn, instead of, they went from an investment house to a bank. Now they'll just probably turn into another agency of the government, their next transformation.
Because I want my dividend check.
Well, I ain't even got my old J prize yet, so I'm not really expecting. I'm not really expecting anything from
Sandra. Where do you?
What?
That's just what you do to me.
you know what the hell? Listen, I have to hang up now.
But... I understand.
No, do send that link, because I'm sort of flabbergasted by that. Comment from that coal big zag. Wow.
it was a tough thing to read before the morning coffee, trust me.
For real.
Later, okay, Sandra. Guys. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, let's keep it rolling. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Brother Luke.
Oh, well, I tell you what, some of these we've been hearing just like you say, you just want to go out back, dig the hole, just holler in the hole for a minute.
It's like a gopher patch in my backyard. You know, I holler down one and it comes out another one. Yeah.
Well, the one that got to me that I've been following for the last couple of weeks was a story I thought that actually finally disappeared until this past weekend when Mr. Ensign's family decided to play payoff time.
Yeah, that was just charming.
Oh, I tell you what, the fun part of this one is go back and go to the Las Vegas Sun site and just follow this story. They've been following this thing for like 2 weeks. And the reporters working for the Las Vegas Sun, they've held on to this one. They ain't let go of it. You know what I mean? They haven't gone on to something else. And
Well, that's because it keeps dripping.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the one that got to me was I wrote, of course, Mr. Kurtz this morning, so, of course, he didn't use mine. My question was, he was talking about it yesterday, and I said, well, Mr. Kurtz, one thing you forgot to mention yesterday was were the names of Megyn Kelly and Rick Santorum. And our question is, why are these people still working? I mean, could you imagine if we turned it the other way? What would happen if James Carville found out a Democrat was about to be exposed by something he found out at CNN and warned the guy so he could get out ahead of the story? Could you imagine the howling that would have been going on? I mean, you know, the Republicans wouldn't shut up about that for a month. But here we have Megyn Kelly gets the story from the husband of the woman that Ensign's having the affair with, and apparently he gets the story 10 days before it becomes public. Because this poor fool, he thinks that she's an honest person, sends her the letter. So within that 10 days, from what I understand from what I've read on the web, that apparently Mr. Santorum gets wind of it somehow, which I'd be curious to ask how he found out about it.
Oh, maybe C Street, the family?
Yeah. No, apparently he found out because he works for Fox News.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
they think he's the one that warned it.
Does the C Street family allow Roman Catholics? I mean, I'm not being a smartass.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, are these the group? Is this essentially what we used to call the Dominionists?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
This is a smaller, more concentrated, more shadowy group. And I have yet to find out. I've got to read the book, The Family. I got to read the book. Because it's a doctrine that was developed by some the charlatan in 1935, who said that mainstream Christianity over the course of, at that point in time, 1,935 years, had gotten it wrong. Okay, and that God really loved rich people a lot better. You know, and we're back. You know. We just passed John Calvin's 500th birthday.
Oh God!
We talk about the prosperity gospel. We talk about dominionists, reconstructionists. These guys seem to be a lot darker, a lot closer to the ground, and a lot more insidious. Because they expect to wield power by virtue of being shady.
The thing that got to me, though, on this whole thing was, you know, like I said, this is from the media point of view. Can you imagine what it would have been like if this had been the other way around? We've been hearing people screaming and hollering, but here we have Fox Noise, which apparently gets the story and holds on to it for 10 days.
Yeah.
And amazingly enough, the fellow who the story's about apparently gets warned, and he comes up there and beats them out so nobody can expose him, you know, at time of their choosing.
But why did Fox get it first? That's what I don't understand.
Because apparently her husband, and apparently they're nice right-wingers too, they trust Fox News. Because they're honest people.
Well, you know, there's a certain degree of delicious irony in that, isn't there?
Oh, there is. You know what I mean, but it's... You're just sitting there going, you know, why aren't some of our quote unquote media watchdogs? I mean, I know people like Media Matters have, but I mean, some of these fools who in the mainstream media who swear they're watchdogs. I mean, why aren't they out there just you know beating this with a stick? You know, because it's like, you know, why, you know, first my question first would be to Fox News: why is Rick Santorum still working for you? Why haven't you had a public firing? And if he hasn't, then you know, don't even bother showing up in any place where they want to use the word ethics, because you don't need to appear. And the other one that got to me, you just talked about it a minute ago. Isn't it amazing now how the same people who a couple of years ago were screaming about, well, Obama knows this fellow named Bill Ayers. Well, let's see now. From what I understand, the last little bit, we've had Glenn Beck and his friend, the Please Bomb America analyst. We don't talk. Nobody talks over at Sean Hannity about the fact that, you know, one of Sean Hannity's big buddies was some fellow named Hal Turner, who now is sitting in a federal lockup, as far as I understand,
awaiting trial, isn't he?
Yeah, because Hal said he was going to kill a few federal judges because he didn't like what they was doing.
Yeah, I forgot about Hal in my list. He didn't get away with it.
No. But the thing was, he was stupid enough that he bragged about it before he did it. It's like, you know, you're just sitting there going, "How you mention it and you think no one's going to notice anything about it when you just come out and said, oh, by the way, we're going to kill a few federal judges." You know, a few people do pay attention to things like that, believe it or not.
Well, and when you start getting specific about it, those humorless guys in the dark suits with the skinny ties and the things in their ears, they will pay you a visit. And to see the thing,
do show up.
And see, Hal Turner was talking about stuff that he was going to do on Inauguration Day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's had to say a lot to finally get noticed.
I mean, you know, and it's one of those things, I'm sitting there going, well, it just sounds to me like Fox News is the new home of terrorism. You know, they were the ones always saying, you know, the Democrats are palling around with terrorists. It's like, well, apparently so's Fox News. Because they're having them on all the time, and, you know.
Hal Turner, Sean Hannity, like this.
That's what I mean. And it's like, you know, it's like we were talking about a minute ago about the fellow that, you know, wanted Osama to come over, Osama bin Laden to come over here and bomb the world, bomb us. It's like, isn't it amazing how few people talk about the fact that Glenn Beck just sat there like a dummy and didn't say a word, didn't say, no, that's bad. No, Glenn didn't say that. Glenn just kind of nodded along, you know, so it's just one of those things.
Well, yeah, Glenn Beck nodding along. When that guy's calling for Osama to detonate a nuclear device in the U.S., how much different, really? I mean, I realize one's a nuclear device and one's a, but how much difference is there between Glenn Beck just sitting there doing the bobblehead thing and Mika Brzezinski and the Mark Halperin and the rest of Morning Joe that Merton. You know, let's not talk about Joe Scarborough.
Well, you're sitting there
giggling along when Pat Buchanan is out there advocating murder. How much difference is there between those two? I don't see much difference.
I don't either. And the thing gets me is, okay, they're out there saying that. There's somebody up in the control booth, some fellow called the director. He's got that big red button right by his desk, on his desk, as far as I understand. And it's sort of like, you know what? You should have been pushing that button and saying, we're going to commercial right now. And when it come back on, you shouldn't be able to find Pat Buchanan in that damn building.
Well, why do you think Mika Brzezinski turned around and issued a so-called retraction and then giggled along at the same time?
But that's what I mean. I mean, that's one of them ones where I'd have sent two security guards in there and I'd have escorted Pat out of the building and said, Pat, you come back in a couple of weeks. We may cool off. We may actually let you back on the air.
Nah, it's time for Pat Buchanan to get the special Brooks Brothers jacket with the long sleeves that tie in the back and the purple crayon for his toes. That guy's gone completely insane.
But you got to remember, like you were talking a minute ago, you know, there he was studying sitting down there taking notes from Henry Kissinger. And if you want somebody he can really talk to, go down the hallway and talk to that fellow, you know, the fellow with the bald head, some guy named G. Gordon Liddy. He'll go out there and tell you he's going to kill a few liberals, you know, if they keep making trouble for us. You know, because G. Gordon said all Nixon would have had to do was tell him to go do it, and he would have killed.
What was the quote?
The Washington Post news staff.
Well, but what was the quote? He would have killed his own grandmother, or was that Chuck Colson?
I can't remember which one it was. I remember he was the one that said, who was it? One of the reporters said he was going to try to make an appointment with him at a corner so he could just drive by and just kill him and keep driving.
Yeah, and speaking of which, our buddy David in South Carolina asked, you know, how about the fit the right wing had about Ward Churchill?
Oh, shoot. Well, but you know, like I say, if you look now and just see who all they're carrying, you know, I mean, who they're having on to.
But Ward Churchill wasn't saying anybody should be taken out and drowned or killed or blown up or. He was just pointing out flaws in a system.
Yeah.
And they were ready, and you know, he had death threats.
Well, him and, what was the other one? Maybe it was Churchill. That they were just like trying to get him banned from colleges. And,
oh yeah, that was Ward Churchill.
Was that Churchill? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, anytime he would appear, the first thing, you know, they made sure they didn't care. But you know, you were talking a little while ago about the thing about Joan Walsh. Just remember now, the week after that happened, Bill O'Reilly ran a new thing with Joan Walsh where he'd gone in and recut the tape.
That's true. He did.
So it made him look like he won the argument. Of course, this, like I say, this was the next week after his editors had time to sit there and recut the tape. And we know that Mr. Hannity just got recently caught doing that to a speech from President Obama, where he went in and did a little recutting on it. You know, where he took out some sections that Mr. Obama said, goes, well, those, we didn't really need to listen to those. No, no.
Yeah, those weren't really that important. No.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, let's take all the little pieces, we'll put them all together, and we'll have you say something totally different. You know, it's getting to the point, was it, which one was it? Like in the last, I think it was like the last Resident Evil movie. You know, where they sit there and the guy can sit there and put it together in little pieces and have the computer say anything he wants to on it.
Yeah.
You know. I was going to tell you, I don't know if I'll be able to talk to you all next week. Actually, science fiction has returned for a week. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
So I think next week it's all the new Torchwood thing's out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What's that?
Well, I certainly understand that. I'm gonna disappear for an hour here in about an hour because Tony Bourdain his new season premieres. So.
Well, you know how it is. It's like right now the fun part is if you like cable stuff, all the cable stuff's just starting up. Like you know we just had Eureka just got started back on the Sci-Fi Channel. And,
yeah.
In Plain Sight and Burn Notice just got started back up on USA. Like I say, this
and what is it? Is it Big Men that's starting back up? Mad Men.
Yeah, over on those A&E, AMC.
Yeah.
So, but like I say, it's like I call it the non-network premiere time. So we get to see stuff we actually like because most of the stuff they show down on the network, so you walk about a week of it and go, "Eh, seen this before. I could sit down. I could sit there." And
yeah, but you gotta admit how much of America. I mean, I would have watched it. It would have been like you know driving slow by a car accident. I recognize my flaws as a human being. How many of us would have tuned into a Sarah Palin reality show? Come on. Come on, Luke. Say it. Say it. I know.
It's... Oh, yeah, we would. It's the NASCAR thing. We'd turn in just to watch the crash. You know, I mean, we're just sitting there just waiting to see what the, you know, because like you and I've said, you know, it's like, we think they can't do anything any stupider. And it's like, by golly, they surprise us every time. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, we didn't think you could say something any stupider, but by golly, you could, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's like going to a bullfight and rooting for the bull.
one of my favorite Bugs Bunny cartoons. Yes, indeedy.
Right,
but I'm gonna let you go on, but I know you got other people to talk. So you have a good evening. I may talk at you once more by the end of the week.
All right, you take care, Luke.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye,
Brother Luke from East Tennessee. And actually, truth be known, that's it. Hard to believe, isn't it? I guess we're pretty well close to the end of the program for this evening. Thank you very much for joining in. Mondays are my favorite days of the week, simply because I get a chance to, you know, two days away from this microphone and I start getting a little nuts. So thank you for making it a special Monday. Thanks for tolerating the two-hour filibuster, too. I appreciate that. Welcome again. I should say this at the top of the program instead of the back of the program. But welcome to the Molloy listeners listening on the Molloy rerun stream sometime between midnight Eastern and 3 a.m. Eastern. You're welcome to chime in anytime, even via email. Love to hear from you, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And many thanks to Mike and Kathy for letting that happen. We do appreciate it. It's the 13th of July. We are officially 1 month away from Netroots Nation. We will be talking with some Netroots Nation folks soon, I hope, in the very near future, about what's on tap in Pittsburgh in a month's time. Of course, we are hanging on for dear life here, just to make it to August, let alone Pittsburgh. I'm going to be there if I have to hitchhike. But it ain't getting any easier. So many thanks to those of you who do contribute to keep the program going. If you have not, and you can, this would be a great time to get in on this little business of supporting alternative conversation, you know, legitimate conversation in this country. Go back, regardless of how you feel about my presentation. Go back. How many stories got covered tonight that will get covered anywhere in the for-profit media? That's what the horn does best. And if it's worthwhile to you, well, we can't. God knows I can't. I can't make this go on my good looks. and we can't go on wishes. So any support that you can spare, we do sincerely appreciate. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Also there is a snail mail address if you prefer not to use PayPal. Try to make it as easy as we can. We'll be back tomorrow night, of course, with a guest on at the top of the program I think you will find quite interesting. Also, a program note, Guy James will not be live this week. Guy is traveling, and look forward to him coming back next week. So he asked that I convey to you his sincere regrets and the fact that he will miss being behind the microphone, but we'll be back next Tuesday, right as rain, and I'll let you know if I hear more from him in the interim. So travel well and travel safely, Brother Guy. Thanks to Peter Godbold, his patient, tireless willingness to walk me through the vast acreage of computer nightmares never ceases to amaze me. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, chief musician, web designer, show host in his own right of All Foxed Up on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. He's not feeling well right now. Get to feeling better quick, John. We're all rooting for you. And know you'll be right as rain sooner rather than later. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch. Starting in 2002 with the initiation of the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org, Ben single-handedly saved liberal talk in the United States, eventually making it possible for the horn to happen. That's why we use that phrase for Ben. His work is also tireless and patient. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They are indeed the bravest, hardest-working people I know. And when you realize what we have to deal with here in West Virginia, you know why it is that I say such a thing. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy! It is July the 13th, and a weird enough day for me to think that it's probably Friday, but it isn't. It's Monday. And that only means, well, it's going to get weirder, isn't it? Welcome to the Horn for this Monday night broadcast. John Fox, if you're around, I hope you are feeling better, my brother. John emailed in to let us all know that he was under the weather last night, and hence no all foxed up for Sunday. Hopefully he will be back above the weather very soon. Let's see. God, I don't know where to start. Nazis in Pennsylvania, Nazis in Washington, D.C. Oh, wait. This all makes perfectly good sense. How about let's start close to home? Sure, why not? You know, I told you it was going to be movie night Saturday night for the whole fam family. And indeed it was. We made our way down to Charleston, the state capital, for the world premiere at the West Virginia Cultural Center. The world premiere of Mary Lynn Evans' riveting documentary, Cold Country. We were all set to be on time and everything. But, as we have noted on a number of occasions, if there's a God, and if, as, for instance, the Muslims say he has many names, well, one of those names is irony. God, dog, the flying spaghetti monster, whatever he is one of irony, first and foremost. For as we went down the mountain, around the curves, through the dips, over the blah, 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 over the river and through the woods to, you know. We got to the foot of the mountain, almost to Gully Bridge. And there is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful waterfall there. It's called Cathedral Falls. When it gets really, really brutally, I mean just brutally cold in the winter, crazy people come and climb the frozen, falls that have frozen into solid ice. But it wasn't winter. It was high summer. The falls were falling beautifully. And also there at Cathedral Falls, a CSX railway line crosses. And it was there that we stopped and there that we sat. And sat. And sat. Why were we sitting? Well, we were made late for the premiere of Coal Country by a coal train! Yes! A couple of miles worth of boxcars trailing their way out of West Virginia carrying our wealth, carrying our health, carrying our future. Yep. It wasn't Mr. Peabody's coal train, but it was damn sure hauling it away. Thank you very much, John Prine. So we were late, and we missed some of the fun, and it was hard to get, well, it was impossible to get a seat in the theater. It's not that small a theater. There's a good number of seats. But it was jam-packed. And lots of people standing outside the auditorium sort of peeking in to get a view of the screen, and they had a little portable PA system hooked up out in the lobby so that you could at least hear the audio. And so that's what a lot of people did. I did get to go in and watch a little bit of it. And I learned a little lesson. Because, you see, there were a whole bunch of Fockers in there. You know, friends of Cole. Because they were bound and determined that they were going to keep them tree huggers from seeing that tree hugging movie. But it was kind of stealthy-like, really. Because the Fockers then had to sit there and actually deal with the fact, the multiple facts presented to them, about exactly what it is they're doing to this state and this region about what they're doing to their own people as well as the rest of us. But just not that there's a very, very great likelihood that you ever will, but should you, just a little piece of information, just a piece of advice from old Bob, because I'm that kind of nice guy. Piece of advice from old Bob. Never go to the movies with a Fokker. Don't. Because they haven't caught it, you know, mountain removers are not the smartest bunch in the lot. For instance, there was the young Fokker couple who had just gotten married, and being fundamentalist and right-wing friends of Cole, they'd saved themselves for merge. And they got to their wedding night, and, well, the young Fokker fellow was kind of confused. And he didn't quite know what to do on his wedding night. And finally, in frustration, his young Fokker wife, who had at least had a little bit of a talk from her Fokker mother, said, "Honey, take that thing you play with and put it where I pee." So the young Fokker man got up out of bed, got his bowling ball, and threw it in the sink. "I'll be here all week," tried the veal. No, they're not a bright lot. So the reason I say never take a Fokker to the movies with you is, I don't know, are you like me when you go to the movies and you pay an exorbitant amount of money, although this was free, but you go to the movies and you pay an exorbitant amount of money, and God knows the popcorn's expensive as all hell, and they salt the living bejesus out of it, so then you'll go and buy some high fructose corn syrup laden pop to wash it down with, which is also, you got to take a boat loan out to get it. You understand the dodge. Anyway. But you spend all that money going to the movies, and you want to sit there and watch the movie. Now, if it's a funny movie, you expect that people will laugh. If it's a tragedy, you expect to hear a little, a little of that. But nothing makes me crazier in the movie theater than somebody who's